There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, let's start the Nerdist podcast. Please welcome back to the stage, Jonah Ray and Matt Myro. Well, what's up, Toucan Sam?
They're great. That's not him. That's not what he says.
No. Yeah. That's Tony the Tiger.
Follow your nose.
What if Tony the Tiger was like, they're great, but so are humans. Rawr! And then just attack.
No, he was kind of a rawr.
What?
What? With that voice?
Rawr. Snap, crackle, and it's all just sugar and milk.
It is just reformed sugar. How many different ways can you? Let's have some frosty sugar dicks. Like, it doesn't matter shape they're in.
Yeah.
By the way,
sugar things. All right, sounds good. I get angry when I
sugar
see
sugar matter.
I get angry when I go down the cereal aisle. I try not to because it just gets me. I was just like, I want them all.
Now, are you like a weirdo in the store where they're just like people are pulling their children away because you're just walking down the cereal aisle going, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's not just a cereal. It's also like when I'm like in the checkout lane and then I see like a new candy bar. I go, no, motherfucker, come on.
What are you doing?
A new Reese's? Fuck you.
$100,000 bar in today's economy? That's worth nothing anymore. The 100 euro bar is better.
Whatchamacallit?
What is it about? Oh, that's a candy. That's a candy.
What's
bar.
We call it? Abba Zabba?
Wow. Abba Zabba.
You're my only friend.
Speaking of dicks on things, if you were down in the green room, someone or several people have literally drawn dicks on every band poster.
Deanna couldn't be happier. Deanna went downstairs.
Jonah's girlfriend had a dick a day.
A dickaday.tumblr.com. She loves drawing dicks, and then she went down. And she was like, "Oh, what glorious place is this? What do mine eyes deceive me? A dick on every band member from Menomina."
Oh, thank you very much. This is my tea.
Yeah, but there's like one band down there with four dudes, and they all have different dicks.
Yeah.
Like one guy's got a really long dick that's down by his leg. Another guy's holding a dick and he still has another dick.
Did you see the guy with just
in a perfect world, they'd all be sharing a dick?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If they want to be tight. and there was the guy that just dicks on every finger of this guy's hand.
Oh, yeah. Dicks are sprouting off dicks.
Yeah.
Cat. There's a poster of Cat Power where she's singing into a dick, and then but she then has a vagina on her face at the same time.
That's some Cat Power.
And then it says like Var, and then they've drawn tits on all the dudes, so it says like Var Titty Theater Cafe Days Are Tits.
That was one of my favorite ones. Was like someone wrote down like listen, I know it's easier to draw dicks on people, but can we get some boobs up in here?
Seriously.
Come
guys.
On, guys. I know. I get it. It's hilarious. We all know.
Somebody, I think, we're pretty sure that one of the artists came back and tried to fix it because one
guy... Did you just say artists?
Yeah. No, not dick artists. I mean, like, the performers.
Oh.
Like, the musicians. Because one guy had, he just had this really cool look, really cool pose. And someone drew, like, you'd see, like, the balls in one ear and then the dick coming out the other.
Oh, like a...
In one ear, yeah.
Like the arrow through the head,
yeah,
but with dick
yeah,
and balls.
But
yeah,
but the old Steve Martin dick through the ears.
Yeah.
And
the old Steve Martin dick through the ears.
And so someone had written, like, yeah, this guy, you know, like, he sure loves dicks in his ears. And then someone else looked like they were trying to cover up for it, and they just wrote, and pussy, too. Like, he was trying to... Yeah.
He likes pussy in his ears, too, guys.
You know how you just put it through your ears. John Hodgman was here last night, by the way.
He was.
And
when I was in we did a show together at South by Southwest a few months back, or a month ago. And
It was 2 weeks ago.
It was 2 weeks ago. I fucking can't keep track anymore.
I think
I'm
it was
a hollowed out person, Matt.
It was either a year ago or a yesterday.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Somewhere within that 365. but some guy just like was like, "What are you, hipster John Hodgman?" And I was like,
to
me.
Oh, why would they say that?
I don't know, because I have the same mustache and glasses, and I'm just a bit unshaven.
No, I don't. But that doesn't. I don't see the John Hodgman.
Because I'm not smart, Chris.
What?
Thank you for saying what I was afraid
to. There was the elephant in the room besides you.
Jonah. Whoa, besides me.
Because you made fun of me. I had to retaliate.
The truth of the matter is, everyone is stupid next to John Hodgman, who is the smartest person in the world.
That's true.
Who, by the way, left me a quote-unquote time capsule. We had a pre-show burrito tweet up right down the street, and the Varsity Theater was kind enough to say, "Do you want us to bring the time capsule that John Hodgman left you?" And I said, "Please." And so I get this bag, and it was basically a time capsule of stuff that was at the show last night. So it was a bag that had the cheese plate and veggie tray from the green room in it. Somebody's sock. I think Kevin Murphy left a flower in there, and then just a bunch of other trash that they had
awesome.
From the room. And that was my time capsule. So thank you, John Hodgman. Thank you for my time capsule.
Yeah.
By the way, Minneapolis, home Duluth, I think actually instead, home of Maria Bamford.
Yes,
is also from Duluth. Yeah.
Bamfoo. Minnesota in general has a lot to offer.
It's a good town.
Yeah.
Minnesota is a good town.
Minnesota. The town of Minnesota.
Well, that's what's so great about the state of Minnesota. It just feels like one big town.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Just hanging out.
Drive a few miles one way. It won't be so much of a... just pick a direction.
I love the habit trail culture. I really do. I love the idea that you never have to leave a building.
It just occurred to me that if you gave me a map and said, point to where you are right now, I'd be like, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I'd go, I think it's near Wisconsin. Listen, it's not your fault. It's just my poor education from Lowell.
Where's Lowell?
Yeah, so the United States of America. Here's Massachusetts and the rest of these queer states are one big queer state.
Yeah.
No.
And the rest.
You got Massachusetts. You got those fucking retards in New York. Then those queers in L.A.
Yeah,
that's America.
I like that the guy still acknowledges Los Angeles.
They did. They're all queers.
Queer.
I did. I don't know why I'm about to admit this, but recently I was playing Skyrim as I am wont to do, and I was on the enchanting table and I created some fireproof armor, which I named Quia Ama. Q-U-E-E-U-H-A-H-M-U-H. Quia Ama. I don't know why.
Why did you do that?
I don't know, because it was 3 a.m. and I was fucking enchanting armor instead of sleeping. And so in my head, I was like,
why are you so tired, Chris? Oh, sorry, I was up all night enchanting this armor. I'm sorry. So sorry. How's the surgery work?
How's the surgery work? I was talking to somebody last night was talking about when they were giving birth and how they had the epidural. And I was saying, oh, my God, I had an epidural, too, when I had surgery. And I felt it scrape my fucking spine.
No.
And then I was, the thought occurred to me that someone had to fucking think about that. If we jab an 8-inch needle into somebody's spine, it will numb them. Who fucking tried it first?
The Nazis.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh.
Jonah, come on.
Hey, you gotta give it up to the advancement.
No, you don't have to give them anything. No, don't. You're not up top that.
I'll own it, but not that much. I won't high-five own that.
But that's like fucked
up.
Yeah,
man, Chris.
I mean, I don't have to admit that.
I also like the fact that you were having a conversation about getting epidural with a lady who had a baby.
Who else am I going to talk about it with?
I don't know.
What did you have an epidural for?
When I had when I had
bulging disc
stomach surgery. No, no.
The bulging dick.
Oh, yep. That's right. You did not have surgery for the bulging. How was your back, by the way?
Great.
Oh, good.
Apparently, all I had to do was lose weight.
Oh, good.
Huh. Turns out that's not good for your spine.
Wait, so when you're carrying more weight, it puts pressure on your spine?
I don't know science, Chris.
It's almost like science were somewhere on a map that you couldn't point to.
Somewhere around Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I think science is near Wisconsin. Yeah.
Science, Alabama. That's an oxymoron.
That does not exist.
Yeah. Whoa.
Hey, where's Skyance?
Really taking it to the South. They earned it.
I'll tell you who my favorite scientist was, a little scientist by the name of Jesus H. Christ.
Who could manipulate molecules to make water into wine but Jesus H. PhD?
I was in Disney World once, and I heard this little kid there. You know how you go around the train of the Magic Kingdom and you see the dinosaur times and whatever?
Yeah.
This little kid asked his dad, he said, Daddy, there were cavemen around when the dinosaurs were there, right? And he had a southern accent, and I was getting ready to punch the dad. If he gave the wrong information.
I like you were already ready to punch the dad.
My fist clenched.
That's prejudice personified.
But it was okay because he said, no, that's just a fake story.
Oh.
And I was like, science lives!
Yeah. And then he said, invented by the Jews. And you're like, what are you saying?
Fist went back.
Fist went back.
Because a lot of Jewish gentlemen are scientists, son. Fist went down.
Fist went down.
Then I just jerked off. It was weird.
That's how you end any story if you don't know where it's going. We've talked about this in the podcast before. If you don't know where a story is going, you just go, and then I jerked off. And it doesn't matter what you were talking. People are like, what?
And I knew that was the last time I would ever see my sister.
And then I jerked off.
And then I jerked off. I'm sorry. I don't know how to dismount. I just don't know how to. Yeah, stick the landing.
Oh. Jesus H. Jones.
Jesus, I don't know that guy.
Jesus Jones reference?
I made a Jesus Jones reference.
Oh, man.
Right here, right now. What to the world?
Did you guys like my Minneapolis, Minnesota playlist? There was one song that was from a band that's not from Minneapolis. Can anyone name it? That dog with the song. Thank you.
Whoa, three. First, I was like, what are you doing, Jonah? Breaking the fucking formula, but you brought it right back around.
I really did. Yeah.
That makes me want to listen to Jonah Radio coming to the Nerdist Podcast Network. No time in the near future.
It's like the next Pee-wee movie. We're all waiting.
Every time I go to Melt to Nerd Melt, where some of our offices are, I just see like a bigger and bigger stack of CDs, and then just Jonah's just almost in tears, like, I don't have time.
There's so many. I don't know what was wrong with me. I was like, I like records and CDs. And then I'm like, I don't have time to fucking put something into something and listen to it.
And it's going to be the very thing that takes you down.
You should just try, asshole.
That's right.
Whoa.
All Jonah wanted was to get free music. Little did he know the shitty music would drive him insane.
Insane.
Some of the worst music I've received. Not to diss any people that are listeners.
But you've got a lot of good stuff, too.
Yeah, tons of good stuff.
But I think people assume not everything you get is going to be amazing.
Yeah, some of it's not my thing.
Okay.
Meaning it's horrible. the best part is the megalomania that comes with being in a band is like anyone who's like, he's not talking about my band. This is not my band, man.
It's never, no.
Yeah.
We have a guest.
We do.
An amazing guest.
Let me pull his chair out. Yeah.
That's the first clue.
And I feel like it's a guest that no one is going to expect.
I'm really excited about it.
Are you guys ready?
Jesus Jones!
No, it's not Jesus Jones.
Right here!
He's not right here or right now. Yeah. Dave Perner. Oh, remember that.
Let's just bring the guest out.
Oh, okay. Ready? Ladies and gentlemen, from Saturday Night Live, Tim Meadows! Hey!
Ciao.
Timmy Meadows.
Thank you. Wow.
This is an amazing story.
Tim Meadows
drugged his dinner last night, and Tim woke up in a hotel room in Minneapolis today.
But we had fun last night.
Well, you don't remember. But this is probably my favorite way a guest has ever been booked on the podcast. I was on the plane to Minneapolis this morning, and two rows in front, Tim gets on, and I was like, Tim, you're going to Minneapolis? And he was like, yeah. And I go, want to be a guest on the podcast? And then that was it. We were on the same
plane. Then Tim was like, what's a podcast?
Wait, wait, Chris, are you sure it wasn't Tim? He's like, hey, thanks for watching.
Want to be on a podcast? No,
I'm Chris.
Think so. No.
Hardwick.
Yeah, I don't, what?
No, I was very excited to come and do a podcast. It was very, I was like, when, you know, you always want to do a podcast.
It's true. You're always ready.
Yes, I'm prepared.
So why did you come to Minneapolis?
I was performing on Wits, which is, yeah, it was a lot of fun. The PBS station here, they have this show, as you guys already know. So yeah, I came to do that. You know Paul F. Tompkins?
Very well.
Yeah, so he sort of wrangled me into doing it.
Oh, cool.
He sent me an email and was like, you got to do this show. They're really fun, and they'll give you a free trip towards Chicago.
Wait, my map is coming together. Okay.
Wait a minute. So he threw the A-list name in there to try to get you to... Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah, then he sold it as a free airplane ride, you know, so... I was like, yeah, because I live in Chicago, you know, most of the time. So I was like, oh, yeah, I could get from L.A. to Chicago, stop in, you know, St. Paul, sort of work a little bit, and then go see my kids, and I'll be on the dime of, you know, American citizens.
Right.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
How was that? So I imagine PBS, probably a lot of pussy jokes, right? Right,
yes.
Off the top?
Yeah.
You can't swear at all.
No, you can't say pussy.
What's the P stand for then?
That's a good question.
That's the other broadcasting system.
Oh.
That would be what it would be called if I owned the radio station. But anyways.
I love that I've been seeing you out a lot doing stand-up, which is not something that you had done before.
Yes.
Really. So what made you decide to start doing stand-up?
Money, one. Two.
The old Dave Foley route. The old Dave Foley route.
Yes. How did your divorce go?
We have similar stories. Divorced and gambling debts.
You can't go back to your home.
You can't go back to Canada either.
No, I can go back to Detroit, though. That's the big difference.
There's nothing you could do to get kicked out of Detroit. It's literally impossible.
They're happy to have you back.
You just got to talk shit about RoboCop. They go, get the fuck out of here.
But no, so yeah, I decided, like, it was something I had already been sort of doing with stand-up a little bit, and I was doing this, like, improvisational show with two other guys from Second City, and we were touring, doing colleges, and then I was like, I think I can expand the part of the show where I'm telling jokes and talking about myself. So, as you know, I started hitting more open mics in L.A. Yes, I've been all over L.A.
Meltdown on every Wednesday and a Meltdown Comedy.
Yeah. UCB, yeah.
And UCB. And so it's been fun. It's been a lot. It's, you know, I learned writing is, you know, it takes a lot, you know, to come up with comedy material.
Oh, Tim, wake up, Tim. Is it harder to go sketch and improv and then stand up, or do you feel like that the improv training and the sketch structure kind of helps you craft bits better?
It does. It helps you craft bits, and it's sort of you sort of like learn about where, you know, the jokes and things that you sort of naturally know. But when I found now that when I do improv, I had to actually stop doing like long form improv because I come out ready to say something funny mm-hmm. instead of just coming out and try to make the scene happen or whatever. Right. So I'll come out immediately with a dick joke, you know, even if it's not appropriate, you know.
We wouldn't know what that's about at all.
No, you wouldn't know.
we haven't need an occupation. Window washers. We sure have to clean these dicks off. All right, cut. Tim, again.
Now, I heard you guys talking about the posters backstage, which is great.
It's a weird, like, they're hidden everywhere. Like, yeah. Their dicks are in everything.
There was a really interesting one that Deanna found. That's her favorite one, where it's like a misshapen dick going into a crow's mouth. And even a couple times, she's like, did anyone see the misshapen dick in the crow's mouth?
It's good that she noted it was misshapen.
Yeah.
It's not like yours, honey, at all. It's crooked and shaped like an S.
Did you just convince her that big dicks are misshapen?
I just, yeah.
No, you don't want those. So.
I turn on porn constantly and go, gross, look at these deformed assholes.
I mean, come on.
And making those deformed assholes.
You wouldn't want those.
You wouldn't want those.
Were you?
I feel sorry for the people that posters belong to because they left these posters here thinking, I'm going to always be remembered at that club. Yeah. Only to come back and find out that they're like, you know, sucking dick.
I don't remember doing that when we did this photo shoot. Was there
remember Blues Traveler fondly. Just putting it up.
How did they know our career would end up like this?
There's John Popper playing the Dick Monica.
Dick Monica? You didn't try.
That's your harmonica?
A Dick Monica sounds like a pan flute.
Sounds like a name of a basketball coach, like in
Dick
college.
Monica.
Yeah. Dick Monica.
Dick Monica's triangle offense is fantastic.
And there's another violent outburst on the top of Dick Monica.
Dick Monica's teams are never playing D. That's the problem.
What the fuck are you guys doing?
Oh, Dick Monica's losing it.
Dick Monica's getting inside it.
Dick Monica taking it to the can.
Dick Monica rejected.
Wait, now he's like... playing? Now Dick Monica's playing? He got rejected?
Don't bring in real sports things into this.
The premise was he was a coach. But it's okay. Good play.
He tried something. He said he's traveling, and then, I don't know.
One of the kids got hurt, and he was like, Dick Mata's got to go. I mean, Dick Mata.
Oh, man, one time I had Dick Mata where just dicks went through my hands.
And then they bled out of the tip. Yeah.
Hey, guys, I heard Dick Monica's coaching at Notre Dame now. Come on.
Wait, I don't get that.
Wasn't that the school?
Penn State.
See, I don't know anything about it.
Jesus Christ.
Just remember, penis.
How do you not know the biggest sports story in fucking
I know what happened.
Years.
I just don't know what school it was. But my favorite thing about that joke is that I was so way off, but people still went, ooh. Yeah, I don't know why you're not supposed to say that, but that's not right.
It's just the way you say things. Sometimes jokes can be like that. It's kind of like the time I did the hammer, hammer, hammer. Oh. No. I'm really getting into it.
It's like the time I blah, 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 blah. Oh. And then I fucked those kids.
Then there's the excitement one.
Let me bring it back to Tim Meadows for one second here.
Okay, I like
that's
that.
A good idea.
I wanted to say to you, Tim, that you are responsible. When I was in seventh grade, and I would
don't
watch,
age it. Don't age
up,
it like that.
Shut up. The point is, I would watch SNL every night, and when you were OJ,
no, when he was AC Collins.
Okay. I did every black person on the trial.
When you were every black person in the news.
That's the best part,
because
it was always in the same sketch.
Yes. It was hard
no,
to
but
do.
The sketch that I remember the most that cracked me up and still makes me laugh is when you had the shovel in your hand with money attached to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because he is answering questions from the press.
Yeah.
And he just, out of the side of his mouth.
He goes, it was like, he says the N-word in order to get
and he
people.
Goes, OJ, what about all the money that's attached to that shovel right there?
And he would go, nigga. Somebody said, somebody just called me a nigga.
And he's saying, I remember it exactly because you say that, then you go, who said that? Why has it always got to be about race?
Ike Turner, on with Kevin Nealon during Weekend Update, like it's like when you would say, when you would like do something bad to Kevin and you go, I'm sorry, Kevin Nealon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that became, if any of my friends, like we actually ended up hurting each other's feelings, it was just like, it's like, well, you're a big asshole. Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin Nealon. So it became just part of our fucking speech.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, was a very nice guy to let me, like, you know, I threw shit on him.
Cakes. An entire huge cake.
Yeah, he was great. But, like, he said that became a catchphrase for him, like, when people would say his name to him, they would go, hey, Kevin Nealon. And he was like, oh, they're saying it like Ike Turner now. Oh, great.
On his stand-up special, everybody, Kevin Nealon.
Do you have the record for, were you the cast member who was on the most seasons?
I was for a minute, and then Daryl Hammond actually went for 12 seasons.
Oh, wow.
Ah, burr.
So, yeah, I went for 10. My therapist was like, that's crazy. You got to get out of this. And so I can only imagine how nuts Daryl must be.
Well, we read the book. And
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you wrote a book, so know how nuts he
must
be.
Yes, yeah. So you need to be that crazy to be able to go that long.
Yeah, well, I was in fucking sane.
Really? How did your perspective change in the 10s? First of all, I would always love to hear what the audition processes were like. What was your audition?
I didn't audition. I actually... I was at Second City in Chicago, and so Lauren Michaels came and saw us perform, and I was in a cast with Chris Farley, and then other producers and writers kept coming back over a year, and then I finally went out and met with Lauren, and it was basically just like, you know, a meeting in his office, and then I left to go back to Chicago, and nobody, this is one of the funny things about SNL, is like no one will tell you that you're hired, and so... You just keep waiting around for somebody. And so it's like small suggestions that you actually are, you know, you've gotten a job. So they'll go, so we want to make sure you got your ticket for New York because you're going to be flying here in a couple of weeks. Don't forget you need an apartment while you're here. And you're like...
But what about the job?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, also, how do don't I forget to bring 12 impressions and a bunch of characters.
Yeah, bring some wigs and also some spearmint gum.
What was your era of Second City? It was like you said Farley. And, yeah. Was it Odenkirk?
Odenkirk was in my cast. And Tom Giannis was our director.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Tom.
Like, other people that were around the theater during that time, they came along after me, were like Tina Fey, Amy Sedaris, Stephen Colbert, Steve Carell.
Jesus Christ.
Matt Dwyer.
Matt Dwyer. Yeah. He was there, actually. That's funny that you say that. Matt Dwyer is great. Great. He is great.
They're great.
Matt Dwyer. But those were the people that were sort of after me after I left. I mean, there was a bunch of other people, too. But those are the people immediately. Bunch of losers.
Was it... I mean, if you're trained... If you have hardcore Second City training and you're in the main company in Second City, is SNL just like, nah, it's just like the shows we used to do? Or was it a, did you feel anything different making stuff work for television?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest difference was that, like, you didn't, like... You know, doing a show like this, you're sort of playing out for everybody. And then when you get to SNL, you slowly learn that you have to play for that one, you know, camera. Mm-hmm. And that everybody is at home. And we used to joke around and we used to call it, I guess because Marlon Brando used to call it the trees. Like, he would say, cameras are trees. He would pretend that they're not real. So you...
Oh, God.
He would pretend that he's not acting. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he would.
So he was acting to not act.
Yes. And so instead of cameras, he would pretend that there was just trees around the set.
What's all these trees grown inside the building?
What are these trees doing inside the Godfather's office? Yeah. I don't...
All right.
Oh, he's walking toward the camera again. Marlon, there's not squirrels in these. These are cameras.
There's squirrels inside these trees.
No, is that again? They're cameras.
Yeah.
I wish you that. I want to see that as a sketch now. Marlon Brando thinking cameras
talking
are trees.
Yeah.
Do you want to, Marlon Brando? Do you like going to out to the country?
No, they got all those cameras outside.
No, now you're just switching them. Now you're just reversing them.
It's just a weird blip in his brain.
Yeah.
Marlon, you went in too deep.
The rainforests are beautiful. All the cameras have the dew on them.
we gotta stop chopping down all these cameras.
I like to, I know my great-great-grandparents. I go very far back in my family camera.
No, again, you're just mixing camera and tree.
Right. You're barking up the wrong camera.
Were there characters that you had always, that you took with you from Second City that you were your A-list stuff that you just couldn't make work on television, or did everything translate pretty well?
No, it didn't translate. Nothing translated. Nothing that I did translated. In the first, literally the first 4 or 5 years, I mean, the first year was literally me learning how to write for television.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that a lower third, I didn't know what it was, you know? I didn't know what a chyron was. And so I had to study and sort of figure out what am I writing? And then it got a little bit easier. But even with the ladies man, which was the character that sort of, was the breakout character for me. Thank you. But that character was something that I was hiding from the show because I used it to make crank phone calls, and I would call the show. I would call people on the show, secretaries or, women that worked on the show and go, yeah, listen, Tim Meadows is going to be late today. I'm his cab driver. He was drinking in the back, but I didn't want anybody to know that was me. So I hid that character from the show for a couple years, and then finally, I did a crank phone call one summer that was very elaborate. That it involved David Schwimmer from Friends. I worked on this fucking thing for 6 months, and then finally it paid off, and I got to talk to him on a radio show.
What is this plan? What happened?
I knew that he was going to be on a radio show in Chicago, and so I got to know the DJ.
Oh my god! This is the Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it was
prank phone calls.
I was like, okay, I'm going to do this thing, And so finally, he was on, and I called in, and the story was, what happened was, I said, yeah, listen, David, I'm just a fan, I like your work on Friends and everything, but I just thought of you hosted Saturday Night Live last week. What was that like? And so he goes, well, it wasn't that fun, the people on the show didn't really... take writing suggestions from me or from, I guess you don't really do that with the host. And I was like, well, listen, David, maybe the writers are a little bit, they got a lot of stuff to do. they're writers. And I started making up excuses for why we didn't really like them. So. And then so we did the phone call and it kept going, whatever. And then later that year, in the fall, I told Andrew Steele and Dennis McNicholas about the phone call, and they were like, we got to fucking do that character.
Wait a minute,
on the show.
So you did this elaborate thing and you just kept it to yourself?
Yes, yeah.
Did you at least record it?
I didn't record it. The only person that really got to enjoy the Leon in the early stages was my ex-wife. Because I'd go, oh, all right, baby, I'm going to call. Let's order a pizza. And she'd go, okay, I'm going to get on another line. She's so happy. And so I really it was this thing that it was this little chestnut of private jokes and private comedy that I had for myself and for her. And I just tried to keep it private, and then I actually had to give it up, so it was good.
Do you think that's where the best comedy stuff comes from?
I mean, in hindsight, yeah, I kind of felt like you know, and everybody even said this to me, like, man, you get so lost in that character. And it's just because I had been doing it for so long without anybody knowing, so I felt completely comfortable doing it. You know what I mean?
Because you've been doing it in the world for years. First of all, I'm surprised that David Schwimmer was so open about, like, yeah, they were, they don't, was he a, I mean, you don't have to dish too much dirt or dirty laundry, but was he
it's
kind
okay,
of
he has no power.
Right. Was he kind of a pain in the ass to work
no,
with?
No, I mean, that was the thing that I was surprised about, because he was actually a nice guy to work with, like, during the week, and everybody was like, oh, he's a great, you know, he's a nice guy. And so I was surprised for him to say that on the radio. And the thing that surprised me even more was because I had worked so hard to get that interview, like to get that call in and stuff. And I was hoping that he was going to go, yeah, I'm doing it.
He starts doing the character back at you. Fuck you, David Schwimmer.
No, but I was hoping David Schwimmer would go, yes, Tim Meadows was very nice on the show, and the other people in the cast were great.
But the worst one was Tim Meadows. Would you have broken character and be like, it's Tim Meadows, motherfucker!
Yes, I would have done that, definitely.
The other character I used to do that used to crack me up was the guy that hosted the public access show Perspectives. And he would just give the fucking time all the time.
Yeah, that was actually Al Franken's idea. Al Franken, the senator.
Senator Al Franken. Yes. Senator Al Franken came up with that idea.
Yeah. Oh, Senator Franken used to do comedy?
Yes, he used to be funny.
Oh.
No, he's great. He actually is. He's a really, I love Al. But, you know, he came up with that idea, and I think that he had saw one of those, you know, African-American shows that come on, like, at 3 in the morning on Sundays. Yeah. And the thing that made me laugh about it, when he pitched the idea to me, he said, first thing we're going to have is the logo of the American flag, and then the announcer is going to say, that concludes our broadcast portion for today. But before we do that, here's Perspectives. And when he said that, I fucking laughed my ass off. And I was like, I'm in, you know? And so, yeah, and the joke of it was that this guy has an hour show, but he can only really feel 15 minutes of it. And so the thing that he does to stretch time is that he'll remind the audience what time it is. And so he'll do an interview, and then he'll be like, so that's great that you created that march and raised all that money for kids. Well, it's 4:15 in the a.m., and you're watching Perspectives. And then he will repeat everything that the person just said. And we're talking with John Johnson, and he's going to be having a program where he raises money for kids. Well, it's 4:30 in the a.m., and... So tell me about those kids that you're going to be helping.
It's 4:57.
That was basically it. Yeah.
Oh fuck.
Thank you.
What's your approach to sketch? Do you like having the character first, or would you like having the idea of like, well, it's a guy and he doesn't have enough time to fill, and then build the character around that?
I kind of like having the idea more. I mean, it sort of works. It can work either way. Like literally, you know, like. I had an idea for Herman Cain, and I did it for for Funny or Die.
Yeah.
And so I called those guys and I said, "What about if Herman Cain like had a sexual harassment video when he was working at pizza Godfather's Pizza? Like, what you know? How would that have played itself out?" And so, you know, I had never done Herman Cain, but the idea itself sort of lent the impression. You know what I mean? It sort of helped the impression. So it was, like, very easy once we, you know, wrote it up and got it produced, like, to actually go into Herman Cain, you know. Because he just became so defensive about everything. Like, especially after he was accused of, like, having, you know, affairs and stuff. He'd be like, okay, well, look. Maybe I slept with her. I don't remember. I mean, but who hasn't slept with somebody other than their wife? I mean, seriously. And so the thing that would make me laugh about him was like how he would like, he just would deflect anything off of himself and to other people. And so that was like the basis of that, how to do that character or that impression or whatever.
Do you like is it kind of cool to know that, I mean, in a way, you kind of don't need SNL because you have outlets like Funny or Die or other, you know, like if you have a sketch idea, you actually can go get it made and still be out in the world and relevant.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, but nobody watches it, though.
Yeah, they do.
You know, I mean, it depends. Like, it depends on where they, I mean, like, the Funny or Die video, people watched it. It got a lot of hits and stuff. But I would not lessen the value of SNL, even though I'm a veteran of the show. It is, like, one of those shows that, like, it happens live every week, and it captures, like, what people are talking about during the week and stuff. So I don't know if, like, you know, I don't know, it's just, I don't know, as an actor and as a writer and stuff, it's just, it feels better, and it feels good, I should say, to, like, when you write something on Tuesday and then everybody sees it on Saturday. You know what I mean? So I would have to say, I don't know, I kind of would rather do SNL than do, like, videos.
What was your kind of golden period at SNL, like, where you really felt like the whole, like, which cast, which grouping of people did you feel like, you know, like, this, where everyone's on top of their game. Right. This is so much fun. Like, we genuinely enjoy doing the show all the time.
Well, I think the cast, because I was there for a couple of transitions, and I think, I personally felt better and more confident as an actor later on. So I would say during the cast with Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry and Chris Kattan.
You were, like, one of the only people that, like,
yeah, they kept, like, me and Norm MacDonald and David Spade were there for a couple of years. But then I was there for a couple more years after those guys. But I felt like I was, like, really at ease and everything. So even, like, I did this thing called Dr. Poop in this one sketch for Will Ferrell. And, I mean, the thing was, at the time, like, we were just so, everybody was just so at ease with doing it. Nobody was nervous about doing the show. So you could, like, take chances and stuff. And there was a sketch where Will played a doctor who was telling Chris Parnell and Molly Shannon, yeah, they're great, telling them that there was something wrong with their baby. And so, and he says, in one point in the sketch, he goes, I'm going to have a professional, Dr. Poop, come in and talk to you about your baby. But the thing was, Molly and Chris didn't know that I was coming into the sketch.
How did they not know that?
Because, oh, they break? Yeah.
Yeah, Adam McKay came to me between Dress and Air, and he goes, Freddie Prinze Jr., who couldn't do the sketch, play the doctor, Adam goes, look, Freddie can't do it because he got another sketch after that, so just go into this sketch, read whatever we have on the cue cards, turn around, and walk out. And I swear to God, literally, that was my direction, and I go, let me see the lines, because it was between, and he goes, no, you don't need the lines, just read what's on the card. This is Adam McKay, you know? And so I go, okay, yeah, fuck, I don't care. You know? And so I did. I walked in, and I looked at the cue cards, and at first I looked at Molly and Chris, and they were looking at me like, where the fuck is Freddie Prinze Jr.? And then I just did the lines, which were something like, you know, we medically, we can't do anything for your kid, but I can do the robot. And then I started doing the robot.
Is that something that, like, Lorne would get upset over?
I don't even think he cared, like, at that point. I think he was just like, you know, the show's almost over or whatever. But no, I went in, I did that, I did the robot, and I said, the other line was, I go, that'll be $5,000.
Yes, yes.
And then I walk out of the room, and then I just left. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then I looked up on the monitor, because it was silence. And then they got the camera on Will, and he's got tears coming down his eyes. And then they cut to Chris and Molly, and they're looking at each other like, what the? And
that's Bad Doctor number one. That's on Will Ferrell's Best Of DVD.
Yeah. It was one of my favorite moments in the show,
so
definitely.
So fucking funny.
Was there anything, you know, I have this dream every 6 months that I'm on SNL, and we're live, and no one has told me what the sketch is.
Yeah.
And I have no idea. Was there anything that was ever close to that as a reality, where you were just in the middle of something, and you're like, I don't know, and just shitting yourself inside?
Definitely, you have, like, you have those, like, recurring dreams, definitely, like, where, like, you know, you just can't make it to the studio, you know? But the one time I remember being really, like, going, oh, my God, this is fucking insane, was we were doing a sketch, and, you know, we have cue cards. And the guy holding the cue cards, he's pointing at them. He's like, you know, they sort of keep you in line of, like, you're, like, here. And all of a sudden, I'm watching him, and the cue cards begin to slowly fall out of his hand.
Oh, shit.
And I'm going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then I just start looking at him, and then he picks them up, and then he like gets them back in order, and then he just starts pointing at lines again. And I just go, yeah, Chevy, you know, trucks are great. Whatever the line was, I just said it. I just said whatever it was. But luckily, he picked them up and put them back in order.
Oh.
And so it didn't really... And it was a dress rehearsal, so it wasn't like that much of a like,
okay,
you know, big, you know. But yeah. But one time, we were doing a show, and that's the last one I'll leave it. But we were doing a show, and the guy holding the cue cards was a new dude, and he was kind of muscular. And so he'd hold the cards like if you're me, and he'd have the cards facing this way so you can read. But his shoulder was huge. And so the first word of every sentence, you would have to think of what it was. Go, the man is coming down the street.
No,
you know?
A man.
I mean, a man is coming.
I'm sorry, Rocky, you're just too big to be a cue card holder. What? Huh. What?
And then and literally Adam Sandler, during that show, he was like having trouble reading, and he goes, I don't know. This guy's fucking shoulder. Move your fucking shoulder out of the way.
It was your dress, but it was...
Move your shoulder out of the way.
And Adam literally was like, I can't do this. Get your fucking shoulder out of the way.
It was great.
Damn. I don't want to get too deep into stuff, but I am curious about Farley and like what the experience was like with Chris. And.
Well, it was great. I mean... Farley is and was my best friend. Like, you know, I knew him before we started doing it, you know. And we would have moments, too. Like, I remember after the first year, we were both on the show after the big party, and we were, like, leaving to go home. And, like, it was just me and him at the elevators. And he goes, Meadows, can you fucking believe this? Like, we work at Saturday Night Live.
Oh,
and I go, I know, man. This is unbelievable. And it was like a dream that like we both had as kids, you know. So that's one of the moments I'll always like that was very special with him. But he's just like one of the funniest dudes you'd ever would want to meet. And like just funny naturally, but also funny like for fans and stuff that would come up and meet him. He wouldn't be happy until he made you laugh, mm-hmm. you know. And that was like, I'm not like that. I could give a shit. I'm really like, I love fans. I love people to love my work and stuff. But like, if you're going to wait for me to make you laugh when you meet me, it's going to be a long fucking day. You know? But Chris really cared about what people thought of him. You know,
yeah.
He really did. Yeah.
I remember like right before he passed away, I remember seeing him on Politically Incorrect. And I think it might have been, it was pretty close to before. And just kind of seeing him being like, oh shit, he just didn't look well.
Yeah.
You know, did anyone have any sense of that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, everybody did. But it's sort of like if you know anybody with huge problems, then it's like, one, they try to hide everything from you. And then the second thing is like, you can't really fix somebody. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you can only offer help. You can. You know, after a certain point, and I told him, I was like, look, I love you, man, but, like, I can't contribute to that part of your life, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I had to, you know, change a lot. And it changed our relationship, too. What was the question? I'm sort of forgetting.
No, that was it. It was just kind of the idea of, like, you know, did people, was it, did it seem like, this is not going in a good direction?
Yeah, but like I said, yeah, I was saying, like, it's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You can only... Talk to them, help them, you know. I mean, you know, you hope that they do it within themselves, you know.
Well, that's the key. You can't force someone. You literally can't. They have to want to do it to some degree. Otherwise, it just won't
There's
stick.
There's nothing worse than a junkie with money.
Yeah.
A junkie with money will get his fucking drugs.
Yeah,
because he will fly. If he lives in New York and you say, all right, I'm not going to let you get any drugs. He will get on an airplane and go to L.A., you know, because
right.
he's got money. He can do it. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know? I thought that would go over better. I really did.
I think just the punchline needs a bit more work.
Really? Junkie with money? Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think if we hadn't just been talking about a tragic story, you might have been able to make that work.
Yeah.
Man, I can't believe we didn't kill right after the Farley thing. Yeah. Well, I just...
Actually, a little space.
on a note, just going off into the Dewey Cox movie, I want to know if your pronunciation of cocaine, which is cocaine, was that you or was that McKay or what was that?
No, that was John C. Reilly.
That was it.
That was his idea. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want none of this cocaine, do we?
I could not keep a straight face during those scenes with him, man. I love him so much. He's fucking great.
Yeah, he seems to be. He's an animal.
Is that it? Can I go?
No, you have to stay. Okay. We're at the halfway point.
Are you kidding me?
No. I'm kidding.
Are you kidding? That was what I was thinking.
Poor Tim. Because we were on the same flight at 8 a.m. this morning, which meant I had to get up at 5:30 because I got picked up at 6.
I got up at 3:30.
What the fuck and why? Why would you get up at 3:30?
I'm very anal, and my apartment has to be clean. I can't leave my apartment without it being clean.
Really?
So I have to wash dishes. I have to throw out garbage. I have to do my laundry, fold everything, put everything away. I got issues, people.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
And so the sad thing is that I know that I have to get up at 3:30 in order to do all that shit.
You're a slave to your obsession, basically. Yes. Like it's. I'm a slave to my obsession of having to make sure that my bed's made, my computer files are all in the right folders before I can leave. Like if I am so. It's like I have this weird indentured servitude to. The desktop of my computer has stuff all over it, and I need to put them in folders, and this has to go in the Dropbox, and this has to go
in
this.
Even on your home computer?
Yes!
Jesus!
Yes, because...
You are nuts!
I can't help it. It just feels like if I see a messy desktop... And it's funny, like, I have...
I like there would be, like, shit all over your apartment, and you're like, oh, the computer's desktop!
Seriously! I'm not kidding! My office has tons of just, like, boxes that have not been unpacked yet... And just shit that I haven't dealt with, but my desktop on my computer,
spick.
Pristine.
So you're like a digital hoarder.
Yes, I am a digital. Well, but I'm also obsessive about like I'm a neatnik, I guess. Yeah. I'm a neatnik with my computer files.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, man.
I'm totally a digital hoarder. Like I know I don't need all those Amazon confirmation emails, but I fucking keep them.
Hey, Gmail keeps on giving you the free space. Why not?
I'm like, I don't know if I can get rid of this. Yeah. This toothpaste I ordered in 2005 was very good to me. I share a memory with it. It was the last time I saw my dad.
You buy toothpaste on Amazon?
Fuck yeah, Amazon Prime, son.
It's a very special part of the show right now.
What is happening?
I think we should let them do it.
I like how whenever we have a guest out here, they're so fucking confused. It's a comment.
But with a special twist, Doug Benson is still here! Doug Benson edition of Quemens. Doug!
You think...
Doug! You all right? We'll sit you in this chair.
No, he'll stand.
That was...
Oh, my God. I forgot I was on this show.
Chris did, too.
I was backstage going, oh, that's where Tim Meadows' characters came from.
Doug Benson, ladies and gentlemen.
This is... Because I know that you're friends with marijuana, I laugh at things... That I attribute to Doug was high. Like when you texted me earlier and you asked me about the show tonight, you wrote, "What time you gumna get there?" And it just made me laugh.
Yeah, what part of that doesn't make sense?
What time you get there, gumna?
What time you get there,
gumna?
You get there, I get there.
We're all gumna have fun now because it's time for Quemens. Let's okay, you and this little boy right here and that person holding up the folder and this gentleman standing up to the side and this guy and the Jonah Ray issue.
You're making all of this up. These aren't even real people.
Yes.
No one has a question.
No, we have six comments. We have six comments.
Here we go. Here we go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you.
The people in the back that are like...
All right, well, seven. This
waving
fucking guy just decided to get up. I guess he figured
no
one would notice.
If you're waving your arms, walk up. Don't be a weirdo. You're not
going
to fly.
Okay, guy waving his arms in the back. And then that's it. In the very back. Okay, great.
Okay, good.
Here we have our comments.
And we're all out of time. Thanks, everyone, for walking up.
Just wanted to see if we could line you up. Okay, madam, please, come forward. What is your question and or comment?
There's a microphone right over there, Chris.
First, my name is Holly.
Hey, Holly.
So I grew up in rural Minnesota, and...
Well, thank you for being here. No, I'm kidding. What's your... here, I just want to get you this other microphone. There you go.
And I'm accustomed to people not really knowing the things that I'm into, because there's nobody in rural Minnesota that knows nerd things.
Sure.
So I've kind of carried that over. I've lived in Fargo for 5 years, but I've still kind of carried it over there.
Is this your
Fargo's
Wikipedia page?
No. It's important. It's important.
Okay.
So I was talking to a classmate the other day, and he mentioned that he was going to be coming here tonight.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's someone else who knows the thing that I know.
Yeah.
And I'm still shocked by that. So I'm wondering, you're kind of on the cutting edge of all the new things.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I'm just right fucking riding the wave. Just riding
what
the wave
of
the cool
we're for?
And the new.
We have to tell him what things are coming out.
I'm just riding a Myra wave.
My question is, do you still get that feeling that, oh my God, someone else knows this thing that I know? Do you still get that feeling, or do you know enough people who share your interest that it's kind of irrelevant now?
Even though it's a given, like, well, these people are probably going to know that thing, it's still, when someone acknowledges a thing that's very close to you, I think it's just a weird sort of biological thing that we have. Like, maybe it's a tribal thing of like, ah, you friend, you not murder. Then I think that's just what that is. But yeah, I absolutely still get that. Or if someone, it's not even like, if someone notices something in a thing, oh, did you see in the background where that thing was going on? Like, then I totally have those moments too. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Very nice to meet you. We are all human.
Or like Chris, like, isn't it a crazy feeling whenever you murder a small child? Like, you're like, other people do this, but we have a secret.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We have something in common. And then we sing the song, because we get something in common. What's your name and Quement?
My name is Eric. I just wanted to say thank you guys for coming here tonight. It was amazing.
You're welcome,
listening
Eric.
To both
no, fuck
shows.
You. Thank you for coming here tonight.
Yeah!
I had fun at the tweet up at the Burrito Loco. It was awesome. I actually do have a question for Matt.
No questions for Matt. I'm sorry. Next.
Thank you, Doug.
Too
Matt's
bad,
not
Mr.
currently
Benson.
Taking any questions
I'm
right
ask
now.
It anyway. Oh.
This game's called Press Secretary. We see how long we can deflect you from Matt.
You could ask Matt's attorney
it's
your
a
question.
Really good question.
Okay,
me.
What is your question
really
for
good.
Matt Myra?
As everybody can see, I'm kind of a fat guy. So for Matt, we
I get these a lot. Don't worry, guys.
We both have been
What's
going
up,
through a weight
guy?
Loss program.
Cheetos!
And I just wanted to ask, I know you said in an earlier podcast you've lost like 100 pounds in the past year. Congratulations, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Anyways, I was wondering, during that time, did you ever have any situations where you felt you hit a wall in your weight loss? You weren't losing any weight?
Yes.
And what
I
did you
hit
do
that
to get
wall,
past that?
I hit that wall 2 months ago. And I'm still at that wall.
What was the wall made out of?
Me too.
Wall was made out of fucking cake, Jonah. It's your favorite kind of bread.
Yay!
God damn.
So,
Jonah's
pit. No. Honest to God, yeah. So I hit the wall.
Goddamn Twinkie wall.
I hit the wall. Then I hit the diet harder than I was doing. I got lackadaisical about it. Then I hit it harder. Then I dropped another like 10, 12 pounds. And then I just decided, and everyone says this is a terrible idea, I'm doing a 60-day juice cleanse.
Don't do it.
For 60 days.
That sounds
all
harsh.
Of your booze are just what Greta does at home. So thank you. It's just more motivation to do it.
When you drop those 10 to 12 pounds, admit it, you just put the bowling ball back on the shelf.
I... do use a 10 or 12 pound bowling ball. How did you know
I'm
that?
I'm against this idea of you doing a 60-day juice cleanse, and it's not my...
Here's the deal. I could go to day 3, and I could go fucking crazy, and then I will stop. That's, you know, I'm just going to try it, see what happens.
But at least he tried.
Because I watched that movie, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Yeah, on it's on
people
Netflix.
People are cheering
streaming.
For the fat, yeah. sick, or nearly dead.
The feel-good movie of 2012.
It was.
I recently
actually.
Watched Dancer in the Dark. Yeah.
But yeah, no. But the 4-hour body that Tim Ferriss book worked wonders for me. I recommend that definitely. I will keep you guys posted. See if I go crazy. We'll see what happens.
Well, good luck with your weight loss, and hopefully you can lose a lot more. Hopefully I can lose a lot more. Hopefully we can both get past our walls. That
we'll
we're
do
in.
It together, buddy.
I think the real question is,
really,
will you guys make out right now? Because.
Sorry, no.
Okay.
Oh, I was gonna say yes.
Also, not dedicated to the program, bro.
I was going to fuck you.
He turned you down, Matt. You didn't even have a chance to think about being gay.
You son of a bitch.
If only you went on the juice cleanse earlier.
That would suck. Honest to God, I just want to lose weight on my head so my hair gets closer together.
What is your name in Quemington?
It was not your intention to be more attractive to men. Let's make that point clear.
My name is Steve, and I have been at both shows, and I can't think of a better way to have spent the last 5 hours.
Thank you.
So, you know.
everybody, look, everybody, it's two show Steve.
I noticed in your stand-up you said something about frustrated writers are what film critics are made of. I was just wondering if that was pointed at someone in this direction.
Oh, no, Doug's not really a film critic. Doug's a comedian.
Oh, well, he does sort of a podcast thing.
I know, but it's, movies. You know.
Okay.
It's,
anyway, my comment was really directed at Tim, and just you've worked for so many years in so many different kinds of comedy. If you had a favorite among them, whether it would be improv or stand-up or sketch humor, whether you have a favorite genre.
Among those three?
Or whatever else you've done, I don't know.
I enjoy improv comedy with a group of people when it's all good. You know, like UCB, those guys are ass-cast, those shows are good. I hate stand-up. I'm kidding. No, I like doing it. It's just really a lot of work, you know, but...
Marry, fuck, kill, stand-up, sketch, improv. Go.
I'd marry improv.
Okay.
I'd fuck stand-up.
Oh, my God!
And
I would fuck stand-up.
Kill the... What is the last one?
I don't... the other one.
I kill everyone.
And then half a question.
Sure.
Joss Whedon has three movies coming out this year. Avengers, Much Ado About Nothing, and...
Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, Cabin in the Woods.
Which one
are you most excited about?
He's also involved with the Morgan Spurlock Comic-Con movie.
Yeah, the Comic-Con one.
I mean, he didn't direct, but still, that's four.
Yeah.
I gotta go with I have to go with the big elephant. I'm excited about Avengers. It's just been seated for so long,
too many things. Yeah.
I just believe that if it had been pretty much anyone else, then I'd be like, I don't know. But I'm just so excited to see what Joss is done with it. I mean, I'm excited for all of them. I love Joss, but I really am psyched about the Avengers.
Yeah. I love Joss Whedon too, but I'm afraid it's going to be the New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day of superhero movies.
Well, yeah. If there's one thing we learned from Spider-Man 3 is that throwing way too many characters into
it's too much.
No. But all the characters have. I mean, basically they're united. You know, it's not like there's not like there's five different storylines.
Also, it's like Friends.
No.
There are six
It's like Hulk always stuck in second gear.
How great would it be if all the superheroes in their costumes were dancing around in a fountain?
Call
Andrew Steele.
And then David Schwimmer was like, you know, the Hulk was really not open to suggestions for writing.
Oh, shit!
Bringing it all back.
Schwimmer-wimmer!
I'll get out of your hair.
Hey, good to see you, man. Thank you.
Good night.
Next, Quemington.
To show Steve. Hi, my name's Kevin.
Kevin, how are you?
I'm the one who sent you the Doctor Who sketch cards.
Oh, thank you for... You sent me the Doctor Who sketch cards. Yes. Kevin Voith.
Hey, very good.
Fucking awesome. This guy, I get this thing at the mail at Nerdmelt, and it's these incredible, like, baseball card size, gorgeous sketches, like, really intense pencil sketches of all of the Doctors. Yep. And they're amazing. And I said to you, like, I hope you're, you're getting paid to do this stuff. And you said, I remember you were, I think your letter said that you work at a hotel late at night,
yep.
overnight, and that's when you draw these things.
Yep.
But Kevin Voith, V-O-I-T-H, I remember you very well because your work is stunning. So
thank you.
Fucking look this guy up.
Thanks for your equipment. I'll see you later.
Actually,
yeah, what doctors? Is it from ER or General Hospital?
Yep.
It's from Chicago Hope does.
Yeah, no. Saint it's Elsewhere. Trapper John and then MASH, and Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
And St. Elsewhere.
Autistic child. It was all his whole idea.
And it was all in a snow globe.
That's right.
Yep. Spoiler alert.
My actual question is in regards to the YouTube channel.
Yes, sir.
I'm very excited about the whole, they're putting on some of the old Farscape.
Yes.
My question is do you have any plans on the webisodes that they've been talking about for years, the new ones, or?
I have no comment on that at the present time. No comments.
Okay, good.
We're
it's about time somebody asks a question that you don't want to answer.
Doug Benson.
Filling
in for Jonah Ray.
Finally, there's a decent reporter in the house who's digging in.
Doug Benson, you roastmaster, you are the Lisa Lampanelli of the Nerdist podcast.
She's in town tonight.
Are you serious?
She's in Minneapolis tonight.
Did I summon her? Oh my God.
Undo it.
I have that spell capability, summon the Lisa Lampanelli Atronach.
Yeah. I think Queen of Mean.
I think Doug's just acting as TJ Miller to your podcast.
It's possible. Oh shit.
This guy knows this podcast.
Yeah. He does.
We should probably have him escorted from the building.
But I'll tell you, we're doing these mini-sodes of like condensing classic Farscape episodes, and we're trying to add some elements that are, you know, sort of like DVD extra elements, you know, for fans of Farscape, and then we'll see where it goes.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks. Really a pleasure to meet you in person. I love your work. Thank you so much for coming to the Nerdist Podcast.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Matt Myra, Doug Benson,
Chris Hardwick.
Tim Meadows.
It's Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, me.
We're going to be out here at that table.
So much for coming out. Good night, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.